Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Rose City Politics, August the 11th. We're a day late, but we're still doing it, so don't worry too much about that. Our regular panel tonight includes myself, John Lidke. We have Doug Sartori. How are you doing, Doug?
I'm coming to you from a tin can and a piece of string. Otherwise, just fine.
I thought you were actually coming from the payphone outside of Fast Eddie's. So
that's what it sounds like.
It's excellent quality. And we, of course, have Pat Papadakis as well. Pat, how you doing?
Hi, John. I'm well. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here as well. We are in BizX Magazine and online at bizxmagazine.com and on all of your favorite social media and podcasting apps. And Rose City Politics is able to broadcast live on tape thanks to the kind support of Luna 625, Building Better Communities. We thought this was going to be a slow show, and then we realized, like, oh, no, there's actually, like, a lot of moving pieces to this show. So we've got a sort of an action-packed one that developed today. We are going to dive into our ongoing regular 2022 Windsor Election Watch. And then after that, we're going to be talking about the strong mayor legislation that we know is coming as early as tomorrow to be passed in the legislature at Queen's Park there. And then we're going to be talking about how Mayor Drew Dilkins has been appointed to be the chair of the committee that gets to set the legislation that's going to allow for mayors to fast track items onto agendas. Mayor Dilkins getting a hand over the entire province. Yeah, we've got a lot to say, but let's go into our 2022 Election Watch segment. That was my Law and Order the show.
That's your sound effects, John.
Yeah.
Production just keeps getting better and better on this show.
I need to get a soundboard, but it's okay. I'll work with myself for right now. For mayor, we have a new registration. But it's a familiar name. Ernie Lamont, I kid you not, the Bacon Man, who first registered for mayor and then decided not to register for mayor and run for Ward 3, decided not to run for Ward 3, but to get back into it, running for mayor of Windsor, probably realized that if you're looking to go selling a bunch of meat, you've got a much better ability to do so if you're targeting the city as a whole rather than just inner ward. That's my take on it. I do
cynical right off the top.
Listen, it's a spicy episode, just like the spicy chorizo he's selling. But I want the opinion of the entire panel here on this one, because I've never seen something like this, quite frankly.
Did he have to pay twice?
I would imagine.
I'm so curious about that.
I don't know.
How could you not?
What's going on?
To file for,
and
it's
why?
It's expensive to file for mayor. Yeah, why?
And do you have to get new signatures, or can you reuse the past signatures?
Oh, I was about to make another comment that would probably result in phone calls. I'm not going there. But I know somebody who would know the answer to the question.
You know, I'm sure at the clerk's office, they were scratching their heads about this, because it's got to be unprecedented that someone registers, withdraws, runs in another ward, withdraws, and re-registers for mayor. Like, you know, it's not like that.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So I had to call.
Maybe he gets a volume discount.
So I didn't see any media at the time of when this happened. And when we first started chattering about this, I called immediately to the clerk's office. And I was just like, hey, I'm sure you're aware of a man. His name used to be Bacon Man. No longer, of course. He's now a man named Ernie Lamont. And he was running for mayor, but now he was running for Ward 3. And has he changed? And there was like the slightest note of a chuckle before answering, like, yes, that is what's happening. And I went, okay, because I just had to call to confirm, because this seems like, you know, crazy town banana pants. And she said, well, you know, I can't really respond beyond what I've said. And I was like, thank you, though. It's been great. Have a great afternoon. Unbelievable. We're going to see how this one goes. Again, I'm going to go the cynical road. I think it's just a more broader appeal to sell the bacon.
The man formerly known as Bacon Man, who formally registered in 3 and from formally registering as mayor, is running for mayor. Okay.
So did he have a ward platform that was distinct from his mayoral platform? Like, is it just the same? Like, is he bringing the platform with him to every office, or are they different?
I haven't seen anything that like he actually proposed this time around, but of course it's been the overarching Bacon Man proposals, a bacon in every pot, but also turning the airport lands into a Cedar Point. He wanted to have a 747 that circled above the city as a restaurant. He claims to take ownership of the fact that we have a casino now, because he once said that Windsor should have a casino. And he's like, oh, yeah, check it out. Look at how things are now. It's like, oh, you got us. It's hard to argue with that. You did say it, and we are here. Anyways, this is far too much on one candidate.
Yeah. But
thank you, Pat, for that affirmation. Much appreciated. Beyond that, we have Benjamin Daniluk still running for mayor, as well as Ward 4 councillor and mayoral candidate Chris Holt. In Ward 1, Darcy Reno and Fred Francis, new registration. Let's have a quick little conversation here about that. We know that Darcy Reno last time around placed second to Fred Francis. Doug, why don't you come with a bit more of the stats, because you, you're our data processing machine.
Sure. If I remember correctly, Darcy garnered about 35% of the vote last time. Still pretty significantly behind Councillor Francis, but a very strong showing, especially for a first-time candidate running against an incumbent. It's pretty clear to me that this is a serious campaign, and this is probably the most serious competition that any incumbent is facing across the city, is Darcy Reno versus Fred Francis. And what's interesting to me here is that it's a clean one-on-one matchup. And as you may recall, in Ward 2 in 2018, we had a similar setup where there was one challenger who was pretty strong facing an incumbent, and that challenger was Fabio Castante, and he took out the incumbent. I think as long as this race remains a two-candidate race, it's really an interesting one. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for Darcy Reno to potentially pull the upset.
Oh, you're on mute, John.
Based on everything that you've talked about before, breaking down this race, you know, this is not the first time that you've done it on air, Doug. You've done it, you know, numerous times that we've looked into Ward 1 here. I'm very interested to see how it's going to play out. Do you have anything, Pat, that you want to add about the Ward 1 field as it stands right now?
No, other than, I think it's really interesting that it's a two-way race because, well, at this point, of course, that's really, really interesting. And I'm sure you're going to get to some of the other ones. It's going to take a lot longer to list them, John. So, but coming in as an incumbent, it was really interesting to see what he said was the reason. He said, we're actually at a turning point. We're at the turning point where what we want to do today, what we do tomorrow, is really going to shape the future of Windsor for the next 50 years. And I'm excited to be part of that. I mean, there's, you know, you sort of raise an eyebrow about, like, so why did you run last time? But what's really interesting is, you know, the turning point part is really interesting, because to me, if I look at, you know, the fact that Chris Holt has come into the race with that message that this is a pivotal moment and will be very telling. Of course, I think a lot of us are assuming that there will be an announcement just under the wire of calls for mayor. But it's just a really interesting comment coming from Fred Francis there on why.
Yeah. Anything else, Doug?
No, I think that Pat raises a really interesting point there. Francis has been on council for some time now, and he has two terms, and he has been, for the most part of the prevailing side on the major votes. I can't think off the top of my head of a major issue where Fred, particularly a major spending issue where Fred was on the wrong side of it. I know there will be some, but So it's interesting for him to say that council and the city are at a turning point, because if I had been that reporter, I would have asked a follow-up question and asked him to just dig a little bit more into specifics, because I'm really curious about what he means by that. And I think in general, that would be perhaps my critique of Councillor Francis, is that I don't think over the past 8 years, he has been a particularly clear communicator in terms of communicating an agenda and beyond that sort of one note agenda that we're all familiar with. He has not been effective at communicating an agenda or explaining his vision of what the city that he wants to see is. So if I were the reporter, I would really dig in on that comment and ask a few follow up questions.
You know, we're at a turning point from, someone who's been either part of a family of or involved on a council of that's, been the same ideology since 2004. But now we're at a turning point. Something has changed now. What is that? I think back to last week when we were talking, Doug, about Ed Sleeman saying that as a father and as a grandfather, I now recognize that climate change is an issue and we need to start to work forward on that. And that's why we need to work together. And it's like, oh, but what changed? What is the turning point now? And is it that, you're looking at the voting block going, wait a second, are we so out of line that we need to now start veering back in because we're outside of the bumpers?
It's really interesting. When you say that, you get me thinking. I'm really curious. Presumably, Dilkins will get into the race. I'm really curious to see what his message is. But some of his most stalwart allies on council, and Sleeman and Francis, based on those comments and the comments that you highlighted from Ed Sleeman, maybe there's a dawning realization that the narratives of the past 15 years are no longer going to be enough to win elections in Windsor. And it'll be really interesting to see that, sort of loose coalition. If it is going to try to pivot to a new message, it's going to be really interesting to see A, what exactly that message is, and B, how well it's articulated.
Well, and we're at a point right now where we're approaching what you could define as generational change over that entire period. And, without getting too dark about it, a lot of voters aren't with us who were with us, 20, 25 years ago. And there's a lot of voters that are here now that weren't with us either, who don't know what our past politics are and are looking at the current state of it, probably going, I'm not going to say, I don't want to go make this. We don't need a warning on this episode. But let's just say a lot of people are going, what?
Yeah, I don't have the demographic. Oh, we can have a warning on this episode. I don't know what exactly, have the demographic figures in front of me, but this may be the first election in Windsor that in many, many years that baby boomers don't represent the largest block of electors in the city any longer. So it could be that generational change is part of the reason for the changing message.
That would definitely actually add up, because who are you speaking to when you're talking about a turning point, especially if you really are talking to folks that may not have the institutional memory to know that you're part of a hold on running this city for a very, very long time.
And Windsor works, right? That it's a roadmap towards progressivism. You have to at least start to talk the talk before walking the walk, getting there. So, they have to at least be able to profess that this is what the vision is, right? As much as we can call out that.
I'm going to, that's really interesting that you say that, John. I'm going to keep that in the back of my head when I listen to them speaking as this campaign starts to ramp up. And particularly when the, when we have another mayoral candidate in the race, as we expect, I'm going to be really listening to how often Windsor Works gets messaged and even stated. And I have some predictions about that.
I want to hear.
That's really interesting. One more point I wanted to kind of bring to the table with reference to Windsor Works and moving forward. The 2018 to 2022 term of council was very different than the 2014 to 2018 term. In the 2014 term, Mayor Dilkins essentially called the shots without a whole lot of opposition or difficulty enacting his agenda in any way. In 2018, there was a different council elected, clearly a more independent council. Many votes have fallen the way that the mayor would like in this past term, but I think that there are a number of things that have happened that would not have happened in the previous term. And I'm just going to give you one example, and that is the safe consumption site. The approval of a consumption site in Windsor is not something that would have been supported by the 2014 council, no way, but that was supported by the 2018 council. So to some extent, the mayor's agenda and the city's agenda has been pushed in a progressive direction in the 2018 term. And I wonder if there isn't a retroactive effort to perhaps co-opt some of those decisions and that change in direction and make a virtue out of a necessity by that crew.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that aspect up, Doug, because even though like he was forced to go in a direction, I think, again, you know, aligning with what these new values and visions are that not only are what, you know, voters overwhelmingly are looking for, but wanting to appear in the vein of being called a progressive mayor, quote unquote, there was still opposition that he was still the leader of to it, trying to have it relocated, trying to stall the, you know, I would argue trying to stall it from happening before an election, most likely, until it could be done reluctantly, probably next term. I'll go out and venture to say that again. Allegedly, I don't know anything about this. I'm not suggesting that was 100% knowledge. But you look at the actions of it, and you look at the councillors who were standing up for it. I believe, again, Fred Francis was part of the opposition, and Joe Anginiak. And it's just like, you people aren't downtown councillors, and you're standing in the way of what the downtown wants. So it was even dug in the situation of wanting to appear progressive, they were still being pulled back to the old ways that are so hard to escape from, because they know their voter base wants to at least see a fight, because if there isn't at least that fight, then what's the point of continuing the vote?
Yeah, and so this is all such an interesting conversation, because now I'm thinking about that sort of political triangulation that you're talking about there. In terms of Mayor Dilkins's messaging on the mayoral challenger, Chris Holt, what is the word that Mr. Dilkins keeps going back to again and again and again?
He's so radical.
Right. Progressive, because progressive isn't enough anymore.
Right, exactly. But also I think understanding that there is an appetite across the city for a more progressive direction.
Exactly, yeah. Doesn't work. Progressive once upon a time would have been enough. It's not enough anymore. That's where I was going, Doug, and I agree with you. By the way, the Chris Holt t-shirts where on the back say Chris Holt is rad are priceless.
Very nice, yeah.
Okay, well, let's keep going, because we're just still stuck in Ward 1.
Yeah,
that was Ward 1. Anyways,
this is why I say never talk about the other topics at the top of the show. I feel like we're back at the CJAM days.
We can do it sometimes, Pat, if you're not here, but that's right. Only 25%, though.
Sure, I mean,
we still rarely rarely get it pulled off. Okay, Ward 2. We've spoken about this one before. Week 13, July 27th week, we had both Chris Soda and incumbent Fabio Costante register. Okay, so we're going to be pulling over to the side of the road right now and checking out the en route at Ward 3. Because this is now it's a ward to watch. We're putting it up on the wall. If this was CNN, we'd have the magic wall behind me and I'd be able to push a button and it would be like right there and we'd break it all down. We had, of course, Brian Yeoman's register. Ernie Lamont had registered for mayor, pulled out, registered for Ward 3 and has pulled out. He's registering for mayor again. We have James McCarthy. He registered as well. But now this week we have coming into the fray. Two candidates, names are going to be well known to a lot of people in the community. One is Ronaldo Agostino, local festival promoter, downtown business owner, hospitality owner, multiple restaurants, involved in the local boxing community, as well as, you know, just being a very involved community organizer, community involved individual. And then Helmy Sharif, who is known to many people involved in multiple Windsor political communities, from the NDP to liberal parties to other religious parties. Helmy Sharif is well known throughout the community. It's interesting. Again, we now have a Ward 3 that is taking on a certain flavor. You get another candidate now looking at the Brian Yeoman's, slice that he's obviously looking for, that are seemingly going to be looking for some of the same votes there. Doug, you are the one who dives into the data and the numbers of the wards when we typically break them down. And I asked you to take your robot brain that you have and feed in the scenario that we have, but input the Ronaldo and the Helmy aspects to it. What have you come out with?
So in 2018, Helmy Sharif got roughly 18% of the vote in the ward. And that's pretty significant, almost 700 votes. That's a pretty significant number. Obviously, it's not enough to win or even to contend, but it is enough to make a difference. So when I see Mr. Sharif's name on the list of candidates, the scenarios that run through my head is to sort of slot him in and think about where the other candidates are going to be crowded by him and by his perspective and by his presumed base of support. I do think there will be some erosion of Mr. Sharif's support. I don't think he's going to achieve the 690 votes that he got in 2018, but I expect he'll retain a significant majority of those votes from last time. He's got those lists. He'll be working those lists again, presumably, and he'll probably be able to secure a diminished but still substantial amount of support. Now, where will that come from when you look at these candidates? I don't know a thing about James McCarthy. So I don't have much of an opinion there. I don't know how much of a factor that person will be. But when I look at Brian Yeoman's and Ronaldo Agostino, what I've seen from their messaging so far is that one candidate has a message of continuity and another candidate has a message of change. In terms of continuity or change from the approach of the previous counselor and the agenda of the previous counselor, who is, of course, former panelist on this show and friend of the show, Reno Bordelon. Yeoman's is the continuity candidate. Ronaldo is the change candidate. So just based on those factors alone, I think that Helmy Sharif entering the race has got to diminish Ronaldo Agostino's chances to some amount, just because that 18% of the vote that Sharif got last time, you've got to think that it's not purely his personal appeal and his personal message that secured a lot of those votes. He was the most credible person who was not Reno Bordelon in the race last time. and that probably secured him some level of support. And to the extent that that's true, I think that him being in the race presents a challenge more for Agostino than it does for Yeomans.
Yep, I think that's a good analysis in the sense that you put it really well, Doug. I mean, if you've got a side to pick from, which is, do you like what's happened, and do you want somebody who seems to be, who's going to fight for the same things that in the last 8 years Reno Borland has done in terms of the vision for downtown and what it needs? It's clear that Brian Yeomans has come through in that direction. And, you know, and when you're talking with someone who's providing the voters with an opportunity to change, and I'm sure that's going to be defined in some way as they go forward, the nature of the change that they propose may change, may be different, but they are the change candidate. So makes sense that they're going to be fighting for the same pool, if you will. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective there, Doug. Appreciate that one. Let's take a look. Ward 4 has changed in a pretty significant way. Eric Reno had registered but withdrew. Kristen Tsiapas, Eddie Haddad, Patrick Sutherland, Jake Rondo, Giovanni John Abadi, and Mark McKenzie are all names that we've spoken about who have registered. We have a new entrant, an unexpected entrant. And one that's not unknown to the community, ran for mayor against Drew Dilkins. Matt Marchant has registered to run in Ward 4. Former chamber president stresses that he is a 20-plus year Walkerville resident, wants to get back involved in city politics. Unexpected, to say the least. The first thing that I'll say to jump off the bat is just to echo, Doug, sort of the conversation that you and I have had over the past couple weeks about this ward, which is that with each new entrant, it's another person that is looking to capture the exact same slice as the prior entrant into the race. Matt Marchand, you know, great guy, like him. He's always been nice to me. Have had good conversations, good relationships. You know, obviously he was the progressive alternative to Mayor Dilkins in the last election. A lot of progressive alternatives in this ward. And I don't mean to say alternative because there isn't an alternative. It's an open ward, of course, with Chris Holt deciding to run for mayor. But wow, Doug, I start to feel more and more building off of what you and I have been talking about. If there was like one strong NIMBY candidate who just came out and said, no friggin' condos, no friggin' bike lanes, just a quieter neighborhood, I want all of you progressives to go stick it, you know where, that candidate could slip up right through the middle there. I caught myself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that still puts us on the explicit tag side. Yeah, you know,
way to go.
Just to recap that, we have been talking about the potential for a candidate who is distinct from the field to enter the race and disrupt it. And I think that is still a live possibility. It would be very dangerous for the hopes of a number of candidates if someone with an agenda and a message like you describe entered it. Matt Marchand is not that candidate, but he is a factor. Obviously, he changes the shape of this race. When I handicap out a race this big, obviously the campaign has barely started, hasn't started officially. But when I handicap out a race like this, I kind of separate the field into front runners, on the bubble, and no hopers. I'm not going to name any names here. However, I think what a name like Matt Marchand and a reputation like Matt Marchand, what he does is he takes a couple of people that I had in the on the bubble category, people who might be able through a strong campaign to establish themselves and make some noise, and I move them into the no hoper category. What Matt Marchand does is instantly become a front runner in this race. And I think that he extinguishes the hopes of a number of people who maybe were hoping that they would have the scope to get their message out and move into the front runner category by election day.
Crush some people, Doug. Tell us who they are.
I'm kidding.
I'm not asking for that. It's a really interesting one to look at now. I agree with you on that assessment. Pat, what are you looking at?
I do get that Matt Martian wants to point out that he lives in Ward 4, but I think that, choosing to go into a race, and remember, he didn't sort of announce in Ward 4 and then had, 14,000 other people decide to run. He's coming into this race knowing that field, and that's just, that to me is a surprise.
That's such a good point.
I do respect that people are better off running in a ward, but there are, for example, other wards where his message and his opportunity to convey that message to voters that have not really had that opportunity to select that way could have actually had a pretty compelling story to tell. And I'm specifically thinking about Ward 6. If we take a look at, how Matt performed in the mayoral race and where he performed well, and we haven't gotten there yet, but we're going to get to 6. And so for spoiler alert, we have another incumbent having announced that she's running in Ward 6. And I think Matt Marchand personally could have offered a really significant option for Ward 6 voters. And I think it's not always, sometimes it's important to be living in the ward depending on the circumstances. And sometimes you are providing, especially somebody who's run for mayor, in any event. I think that, I am listening to Doug talking about that he pushes some folks off. There are some other names. Despite the fact that Matt ran for mayor last time, I would go so far as to say his name recognition is not tremendous, although I think Ward 4 voters are probably voters who do pay attention, relatively speaking. So those are really interesting things. And I'll tell you what does stand out for me right now in Ward 4, and that there's one woman running on there, and that's Kristen Siapas. And to me, if I'm kind of looking, they're progressive. There's a whole bunch of names there. It's an open race. What don't we have enough of on council? And just sort of taking a look at maybe how I'd want to sort of size up candidates, that to me is a standout.
That's an excellent, excellent point, Pat. And I totally agree with your assessment about Marchand's chances. I think it would have been strategically a lot smarter to go into Ward 6 and have that contrast. There's a superficial assessment that there's no incumbent here and there is an incumbent in Ward 6. But I think that your argument is really compelling, and it would have possibly been a more interesting race citywide and a better chance for Marchand if he had chosen to go in 6 rather than to get into this crowded field. Because the thing about having 8 candidates and counting in Ward 4 is that weird things can happen when you're when you're going to win with someone's going to win with 28%.
Weird things can happen and weird people can get elected.
As we've seen.
We've seen it. It's happened. It could happen again. Same
for our show, though.
I think Holt had 28. Yeah, I think Holt won with 28% his first time.
Weirdest one I know. Okay.
Radical, anyway.
Moving on. Ward 5. Nothing's changed since last week. Curry Soulier is running. Alessandro Didon, that's Alex as well. Caitlin Damaris, Ken Acton, Richard St. Denis, and incumbent Ed Sleeman. Ward 6, we have Dylan Graves, Beth St. Denis, Ashley Lafrenier, and new entrant this week, incumbent Joanne Gignac has thrown her name into the ring. Windsor's longest serving counselor. She's been here for almost 18 years, I believe, if not potentially longer. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but what do you guys
two or 2002 or three, I think it was.
Well, yeah, so close to what I'm talking
2003,
about.
2003,
I'm within the realm then. You know, not a surprise, I think. We had a little bit of a debate earlier, I think last year, Doug, we were talking about whether or not it looked like she was going to be running again. There was a little bit of pushback, specifically, I think it was the trolley, was it not? And a few other initiatives where we saw for the first time ever a crack in what was always a steadfast allegiance of the Dilkins post Francis regime, if you will. We now have Joanne Gignac running again. Obviously, you know, able to collect the votes. She does that. Doug, what do you see with how the situation is? I mean, I look at it and I assess that, you know, it's hers. She wins. You look at the candidates and I don't think that there's enough opposition to her to take away from the base that she has continued to hold.
Based on this field and what I know about this field at this moment, I would tend to agree with your assessment. I don't know much about Ashley Lafreniere, Beth St. Denis, or Dylan Graves. And as an aside, candidates, you are allowed to communicate with Rose City Politics. And we'd love to hear from you and we'd love to hear what you're all about. And it will help improve our coverage and it will help ensure that we accurately represent you. But
info,
putting that aside.
Info at rosecitypolitics.ca. That's info at rosecitypolitics.ca. Let us know what you stand for and let us know what you don't like other people and why they shouldn't stand for it. And give us your tips.
Send us your campaign stuff.
Yeah. Putting that aside, though, I think you, if you recall, in the 2018 campaign, Joanne Gignac's vote share continued to decline. It has declined election after election, much like Ed Sleeman's. Jeff Denemy, nice guy. I did not think a particularly effective campaign, but you know, a nice guy and definitely worked hard. And he secured a very credible share of the vote. Again, on the back of a not, you know, like a campaign that was run out of his garage kind of thing. He was able to secure a significant vote share. And it's clear to me that there is an appetite in Ward 6 for change. There is an appetite in Ward 6 for something different. And whether or not that is material and whether or not that desire has an outlet is going to depend on whether a credible candidate with some name recognition chooses to get into Ward 6 or not.
I agree with that assessment, and particularly with three new names in the race running against an incumbent. They're splitting the "I'm looking for someone else" vote, if you will, and that makes it unless somebody comes in that's a very strong candidate, Joanne Gignac will be cruising on this one, in my view.
Yeah. And just one more point on that. I know that something we had talked about in the past on this show was some speculation about whether popular school board trustee Kathy Cook was considering a run in Ward 6. Kathy Cook would be exactly that type of candidate, I think. The organizational ability, the access to savvy resources who can help, and a record of being elected in that ward at another level. However, she has registered for the school board race, so that eliminates her from the potential pool of candidates.
Right. So this is the one that I thought that Matt could come in and really present an alternative, and why in this particular race, I think someone who's already run for mayor, who's known in the community, that sort of living in four but running in six would not have been. Anyone who's looking to change and looking to park their vote is not going to be concerned on that particular issue in any circumstances, but he's in four.
It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out again. If someone credible enters the field, there's a chance, but as it stands right now, it's a coronation, in my opinion. I love how optimistic I was that we were going to get to anything other than just doing an assessment of the ward races.
Like
because
this, though.
Yeah, this is the show. Yeah, it's great, though.
I'm willing to go back to three if we're going to do that.
Well, let's finish the whole loop and we'll see where the other side pushes us out. Ward 7 remains unchanged. Greg LeMay, incumbent Juan Gill, Sydney Brouillard Coyle, and then Angelo Marignani. Ward 8, we have Gary Kashak. I find it interesting. I do want to stop here right now. Ward 8, Gary Kashak. That's
wow.
It. It's the only race that only has one name in it. I haven't heard any rumor mills spinning. Have either of you heard anything at all about Ward 8? Doug, I'm seeing a nod.
Yes. I anticipate there will be at least one other candidate entering the race before the deadline.
Okay, cool. Can you give us like any hints or anything without giving it away?
I certainly cannot.
Okay, well then there you go. Look, I had to ask. That's the whole point.
Well, a two-way race for someone coming in against an incumbent is the way you want it. So that person, unless there's more, you know, unless they're lining up to announce next week in Ward 8, that already is a good sign if they're considering it.
Well, then there it is. Ward 9, Harinder Cheema, incumbent Kieran McKenzie, Dan Mokrzycki. I'm thinking that Kieran's probably going to handily take this one just because I haven't seen any campaign operations from either of the other candidates. There's no front facing anything at this point, and you're up against an incumbent who quite frankly knows how to work the media, who knows how to play the game, who has a good supporter base, who is, you know, he's doing everything you need to be doing.
Well, and served, you know, almost 4 years in a very solid way. I mean, so I think that Kieran is pretty well in the position that Chris Holt was seeking re-election in his second term, right? And I think we'll see those kinds of high numbers for Kieran and for very similar reasons. Came in, had a very solid first term, in many ways hit the ground running in ways that others can't because of his background. But has been, you know, terrific on council. So,
yeah, and Kieran McKenzie is one of those politicians who is a political lifer. Kieran has a ton of campaign experience. One of the most politically savvy people that I know. Certainly has the experience. You just aren't going to come in and take out an incumbent with the profile, experience and record of Kieran McKenzie without making a gigantic splash, and I don't see that happening here.
This would be a David versus Goliath, but we don't even have a David right now. So Kieran's the Goliath. He gets to stand strong. Let's move on. Ward 10. Pat, this is what I'm excited to get your reaction to because we didn't get a chance to last week. Doug and I had a lot of fun with this one. For those who haven't tuned in or for those who just want to revel in it one more time. Ward 10 has, of course, incumbent Jim Morrison, who has registered. And unexpected to some, expected to, I believe, to all of us on the panel, almost hoped for by some on the panel as well. Paul Borelli registered last week. And without further ado, Pat, the mic's yours.
Come on. I mean, it's like a little gift, a holiday gift for us here. That's fun. It's also interesting that it's just the two of them, right? So that also sort of just makes it very, very interesting. You know, I actually thought of Paul when we were back talking about Bacon Man and his idea, you know, that he, you know, he's the reason we have a casino because he had an idea. And it, you know,
it the did. Farmers it did. Markets?
Yes.
I thought you were going to say he's the reason people ride their bikes on the sidewalk, but that one's good too.
So yeah, thank you, Paul. Thanks for making our show helping make our show. It's going to be, well, it's really interesting. You know, I look, that ward is just so interesting. That ward's gone through, you know, quite a few years of really interesting elections. And yeah, it's going to be interesting too. Why not?
Yeah, you know,
Will they break their streak of turfing incumbents after one term?
Oh no!
Three times in a row.
You know what? I'm sorry, but I didn't listen to the last show, so I don't know if you went there. Did you perhaps speculate about, you know, what we think, you know, like, trigger warning, what's in the mayor's head right now about that word? Did you have that conversation? Darn it, we think the same way. Okay, all right. So back, including me, to listen to the last show. I'm sure all the good stuff's there.
No, this is a good addendum, though. I mean, yeah. like because, yeah, we spoke about it and like what that means. But I mean, like, what's your perspective overall there?
Well, I think, you know, so this is really interesting on a more serious note. I think that we all know that the mayor could count on Paul Borelli's vote. I mean, and I also think that that's one of several reasons why they did not reelect him. So, you know, it's still Paul Borelli running against Jim Morrison, but I think it's a really interesting wake-up sign for Jim Morrison in some ways, because, you know, what do you think when you're Jim Morrison right now, in the sense that you sort of came in, you know, I listened to Doug say earlier that when we started the 2018 council term, that there was a lot of independence, you know, on that council. And that's why we saw it was not the same council of 2014. And I think that was true at the beginning. And I think that was really, really interesting. And it really excited a lot of people. But I have to say that I think that as far as Jim Morrison is concerned, and to some extent, Gary, I'm going to throw him into this ring on one vote alone. And I know I know them both. I like them both. But I have to be honest in when I say this one. To me, this was a defining moment and a defining vote on that council. And to me, an unforgivable one, frankly. And that was the firing of Jason Raynor. All right. I mean, there are votes that you can, you know, you hope people see it a certain way. You hope people can, you know, vote in a particular way, stand up for a particular thing. There's a lot of that happening. And sometimes you're disappointed and life goes on. But there are some either votes that are major in terms of the impact it has on the community or major in telling us a lot about how you're willing to think through what is right now happening. And it's not that they just voted to fire Jason Raynor. It's how that went down that, to me, is the unforgiving nature of that. So, you know, was Jim Morrison an independent thinker coming in at the beginning? I think absolutely yes. And I think part of that is because Jim Morrison talked to a lot of people and really try to find his way, navigate what it would look like to be on council, to be on council with this mayor, to be on council with his colleagues, found his way around that. But I think he ended his, you know, or you know, in the latter part of this term, as it comes to an end in any event, got into a comfortable, frankly, maybe even a little bit, you know, a little bit of arrogance there, of comfort of not having to really think through and work hard on the importance of those votes. And so it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, he's not going to be in the same position as Joanne Genia cruising into election. Do I think realistically that the voters are going to go back to Paul Borelli? No, I don't. So there's that. But you know what? Nonetheless, good to see a race in War 10.
One thing I'd like to bounce off you, Pat, since you didn't hear last week's show, I kind of raised the possibility that Paul Borelli getting into the race makes it ripe for a third candidate to potentially come in and disrupt. And I'm curious about your thoughts.
100%. I think that's a really good point. In fact, I was going to suggest two-way is a different conversation than a credible, good name. Someone, this would be one where you wouldn't want to be from another ward. This one, you got to be right in Ward 10. Absolutely could come in right there and be disruptive. Yes, I agree with that. All right, and that's the end of the show.
Well, I did just want to add that I found it really interesting. I know we're not going to go into the conversation about strong mayor legislation, but what we're talking about with the dismissal of Jason Raynor, you know, with a, let's just call it what it is, a unilateral dismissal where the direction came from, we all know which office, where it came from, presumably, at least allegedly. I'm going to cover my bases just because this is a public broadcast. Look at what one of the new powers of the strong mayor legislation is. The ability to appoint the CAO unilaterally from the mayor's office and set the agenda and budget of council moving forward. I just find it interesting that, and I made this joke in our chat that we have between all of us, and Doug, you were the first one to respond. I said, well, it looks like the strong mayor legislation is going to go through tomorrow, or as we like to call it, Windsor City Council. And, you know, you look at it and you just, you see these powers and, you know, I'm trying to keep, you know, when I read through policy, when I read through what's coming out, I try to keep a objective brain of it and not, you know, get tampered by, you know, my own thoughts about things. And reading through this, it was just like, this is just how Windsor operates. This is just how things go here.
This is,
what do you mean?
Yeah, you know, like, it's probably like, not that different in a lot of cities across Ontario. I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of moral authority in the mayor's office.
It whatever the
formal
it.
Yeah.
I find it interesting. And we're going to talk about this one. I have a feeling that we'll probably end up doing this as an after show.
It does sound like that's exactly where that one belongs. Yeah, whoa, very much so.
on a patio with some drinks. We've done over an hour now just going through
have
the election.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And that just goes to show when we end up getting a good conversation, we love to stick with it. And we thank all of you for sticking with it with us. We are going to be calling it quits though here, folks. August 11th. Who would have thought the summer is flying by and we are getting closer and closer to an election that is far more important now than it was a couple days ago, knowing that strong mayor legislation is coming through. The mayor is going to have some pretty strong powers. I love to leave the thought process right now with, imagine a city with a strong progressive mayor who has the powers of veto, the powers to set the budget, the powers to hire and fire senior staff. This could blow up in, you know, an expected outcome of someone who thought that this was going to go one way, potentially. We'll see how that all turns out. Our regular panel tonight, of course, though, John Lidke, myself, we had Pat Papadeus here and Doug Sartori. And we are in BizX Magazine, bizxmagazine.com. And we are on all of your favorite social media and podcasting apps. And Rose City Politics is able to broadcast live on tape thanks to the kind support of Leuna 625, Building Better Communities. We will see you next week. And it'll be the last week that we have with, it'll be the second last week, of updates for council candidates. Nominations will end 2 days after our show on Wednesday next week, and we'll get you the updates as they come and then start covering the campaign in earnest, because we're approaching the fall. It's been fun, folks. Have a great night.